Hello to all my policy wonks out there and major fans of the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. A disclaimer about today's episode, we refer often to the E15 waiver needed for this summer driving season. This episode was recorded just before Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Lee Zeldin issued that waiver, making E15 available throughout the summer. Take a listen anyway. It's still a lot of great information, especially about year-round E15 in the entire biofuels industry. Hope you enjoy it. This is the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Thanks for tuning in to the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, with some support from Indiana Farm Bureau. Eric Pfeiffer here from Hoosier Ag Today, and we're here at the Indiana Soybean Alliance and Indiana Corn Growers Association HQ down here in Indianapolis, and I'm with Steve Howell, Indiana Corn and Soy Policy Guy. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Eric. Good to be with you again.
Can we just go ahead and put Indiana Ag Policy Podcast co-host in your signature line in your email? I mean, is that doable now? Can we just?
I don't want to hurt your brand, but you know, I'm open to it.
I mean, at this point, it just seems like maybe we should just do it. I mean, it's
sure. Why not? It might be believable to some that I actually have some work to do, so maybe it's good to add that to my signature line.
Not funded by checkoff dollars.
Correct. Yeah, it's all policy work.
Absolutely. And we could go on the road. We could do some of your impressions too. I mean, we could just make a whole thing of this, Steve.
Hey, I'm open to it. You give me a list of impersonations, I'll start working on them, and we'll do a road show. Which I think I owe you a tenderloin. I'll just have to fess up. You know, I'm a man of my word. I think we have a tenderloin we have to go get at some point in the near future.
We had a bet, and I won. What was the bet? It was the farm bill bet, right?
Yeah, I was under this impression that, you know, Congress would roll up their sleeves, get the work done, and have a farm bill passed at the end of last year, and I come up short. So, and just a mention to my minister, who, you know, we are opposed to gambling, so I was probably going to buy Eric a tenderloin anyway, so it wasn't truly a bet. So to cover myself there with my minister.
We'll do the next bet offline then, because I don't think it's getting done in 25 either.
I've changed my outlook on some things, so we can talk about that in a future podcast. So
we'll get around to that too. Elena Jetty is here as well, and you know, if you listen to this podcast much, you know I don't do much in the way of preparedness. I don't do much in the way of research. I don't know what your title is. I know you work in biofuels. That's why I call Steve the policy guy, because I don't know what his actual title is. What is your actual title?
Well, hello, Eric. It's always a pleasure to see you. Thanks for having me. Happy to add a little biofuel to the fire here on this podcast.
Absolutely.
So it is I am Director of Market Development -biofuels, technically.
Okay.
But I also get called, hey, biofuels girl, race girl, you're that corn girl. I respond to a lot of things, as you know. I have a very,
okay,
you know, really easy name to pronounce, which, you know, I never have to worry about. So, yeah, I'm happy to discuss a lot of things happening in the industry, both state, federal, all over. So happy to jump around wherever you like to go, Eric, as usual.
Well, we appreciate you coming on board here, because there is a lot happening in the biofuel space. You mentioned at the state level, at the federal level, there's a lot happening here with biofuels. Let's start at the state level. And we dedicated an entire podcast earlier this year to a couple of bills that were fully supported by Indiana Corn and Soy, House Bill 1127 from Representative Heine, Senate Bill 254 from Senator Buchanan. And Steve, remind our listeners what these bills were really all about, because really this was about incentivizing retailers in an effort to grow demand for corn and soybeans, right?
Yeah, that's part of the work we do. It's always finding additional markets for corn and soybeans, and a lot of our policy work is to that effort. We want to increase the value of corn and soybeans right here in Indiana, and we saw an opportunity to do that with some tax incentives for retailers who offer higher blends of ethanol and higher blends of biodiesel for sale right here in Indiana. Because if we grow that fuel here, or we grow that crop here, we produce that fuel here, and we see an opportunity to expand that market and provide value to Indiana corn and soybean farmers.
And unfortunately, mm-hmm. with where we are here in the session, which is about to close out, these bills didn't quite make the cut. And it's a shame, really. It's a shame that it didn't work out, largely because of budget issues for the state. Elena, what could these bills, what could they have done for biofuels here in Indiana mm-hmm. from your standpoint?
Well, yes, the sad part is it didn't pass. I do like to look at the optimistic side of things, where it got really far along this process. As I've learned working with Steve over the years, I'm an action-oriented person, so when things are needing to be get done, my brain just like, we're going to get it done. So I know, have learned that in policy, it doesn't always work like that. It takes sometimes multiple years to shop it around, get your coalition together, get folks to understand exactly, you know, what this is going to do and how it's going to benefit them. I would say, yeah, so it didn't pass, but it got so much, you know, highlights throughout this year. It really helped my conversations talking to the different fuel retailers and convenience stores about the products, ethanol, biodiesel, putting in, you know, these different fuels to be competitive on the street, how it can, you know, save them money and reduce their carbon emission footprint. So it really opened the door when we have these carrots, I would say, and these incentives, to, you know, get those conversations started with retailers that I may not worked with. And so we're members of our Indiana Food and Fuel Association. So it really gets us in front of those retailers who are curious about the product. And anything you can say to incentivize and say, hey, you'll get an incentive to do this, definitely gets their attention. And we'll talk about later how that can, you know, funnel up to a federal, you know, level grants and things like that. But I think for this one, it was still a win. And I don't think it's dead. I think, you know, it's something the conversation will happen again. And, you know, money, I think that's the big thing. It's, we want to do things out of the goodness of our heart with a lot of things, but our organization is working to make our farmers profitable. And my job is to also have the retailers be profitable. So when we have incentives or programs or grants and things that we can help offer through our organization, it just, I get those phone calls all the time. Elena, is there, how did it go? Is there anything available? I'm thinking about putting in this new site. I want to include ethanol. I want to include biodiesel. Okay, let's have a conversation. And so that's how I'm looking at this process. I don't think it's a loss. I think it's actually just gotten further along. This is year three, so I'm, you know, gearing up for year four.
And Steve, it sounds like legislators this time, there's been a lot of education here over the years, that the legislators now, it really did come down to a budget issue. I mean, we just got the forecast. $2.4 billion is what they're trying to reconcile with right now, with the budget that they're writing and trying to figure some of these things out. It really is a budget issue. There's not much that they're arguing with as far as what's in the bill.
Yeah, I'm real proud of the work that we were able to accomplish, not just with the corn and soybean organizations, but with our coalition group, which included Farm Bureau, Country Mark, Valero, Chevron, Cummins Diesel, that all those stakeholders really did work together throughout this past summer, last summer, and provided some really good information to legislators. We had no opposition to the bill. We did have one no vote in committee. That senator wanted some additional information. She came around later. So there was overwhelming support for the industry, for the concept of the bills, what we were trying to accomplish. And we knew about halfway through session that we had the support that we needed. However, it was going to be a cost to the budget. And we knew that the success really did hinge on that April forecast, which was released April 16th. And as you mentioned, it was a big shortfall in the projection. So just not room to make it happen this year. So even though we did come up short, if you want to look at a baseball analogy, I think we went to the plate. We had a solid hit, made it to first, got through a couple committees. So I think we were stranded on third. We were really thought we could make it home, but just given the budget forecast, the revenue forecast, just not in the cards this year. However, a lot of good support built within the legislature, and I would say this biofuels coalition that we were able to put together, it can be used in other efforts. We've got a liquid fuels summit that Elena will talk about more. Getting these folks together, how can we find opportunities to expand this market here in Indiana and elsewhere to benefit corn and soybean farmers? That's really what we're after, is to benefit our farmers. And I think this coalition group that we're able to put together can be used in other ways.
Steve mentioned the summit. Let's just go ahead and go there, because this is a really fun event, I know. Tell us about the event a little bit and what folks will find there. I wish I could make it. CJ's going to go. CJ from my team, he's going to be there, I promise you. He's going to go and cover the event for us at Hoosier Ag today. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the event and what all is going to go on there.
Well, thank you for plugging it with the word fun first. So I find that people like to go to do most things if they know they're going to have a little fun. It is a policy event, so obviously we're going to be talking a lot on those topics that we're covering here today. But yeah, May 6th and 7th at the Gridiron Hall Colts Pavilion off 56th Street, we're going to have High Performance Low Carbon Liquid Fuel Summit. It's the third year of this. We've had some rebrandings over the last 7 years, if you can believe it, that I've been in this role. And this is really a way to bring a lot of more folks under this tent. So we talk about ethanol, biodiesel, renewable diesel, sustainable aviation fuel. We're really trying to tie in just some other projects and programs that we're working with the flashy part. I'll talk first. So we've got a really great panel that our CEO, Courtney Kingery, is going to moderate with Mel Raines, who's the CEO of Pacer Sports and Entertainment. We've got Jill Gregory, who's the new Andretti Global President, and Roger Vandersnick, who is the Chief Commercial Officer for the Colts. And so being in the Colts backdrop, because they use a product called high oleic soybean cooking oil in all these concession stands that I've mentioned for these sports venues, which could definitely be another podcast all in itself, is the foundation of that component with the oil. But they're also supportive of the renewable fuel side when it comes to racing with the renewable fuels, using biodiesel and renewable diesel in the transporter trucks for Andretti. And then, you know, with Gainbridge, we have currently, if you go to a game, we have a high octane drumline fueled by unleaded 88, which is 15% ethanol blend. So all of these folks are coming together for that kind of wrap up panel, just to kind of put a nice bow on it. But ahead of that, we're going to have Steve cover state policy topics like we're talking about here. We'll have a California guest that's going to kind of bring in that state component to it, just to give the audience a little bit of a diverse awareness of happening here in the Midwest versus happening on the West Coast.
Which is diverse, yes.
Which is diverse. California is its own, it's a beautiful state in so many ways, and so complicated in so many others. Then we've got a federal policy that's going to bring in a lot of the stakeholders that Steve mentioned, coming from some of our national partners like Clean Fuels Alliance America, Growth Energy, AFPM, which we've got, you know, our small refinery here, Country Mark, that's, you know, a member of, talking on there. Also, Michael Hartrick is from the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. I want to have like a automobile perspective on this. John Eichberger, who's the executive director for Transportation Energy Institute, is going to be moderating a lot of this, really setting the table for that first day. And then the next day, we're going to kind of build on to where is, you know, the global supply chain when it comes to feedstock, building onto it with fuel innovation and retailers. I'll be moderating that panel. We've got into, you know, how is just different political landscapes shaping the market, both here domestically and internationally. We've got really exciting things happening with Purdue University around the motorsport engineering degree that they just unveiled last year under their mechanical engineering department. Land, air, and sea, which will cover, of course, you know, I mean, every sustainable aviation fuel, carbon capture, sequestration, things that are happening in that space around the marine as well. So we're adding some new components this year that we haven't had in the past as we've as we're growing a lot of these program areas. And then I'm really excited to pull in some of our local folks. So the city of Carmel will be there, street department. They recently won a really prestigious award with a company called Geotab. It's a telematics company, so I'm going to have them there. And then we're going to show a big, broader picture with some things happening with PepsiCo and biodiesel and technology. And so we'll have all of this jam-packed into, you know, a day and a half, Eric, right? And then everybody's going to go home. And like, I know exactly what to do. I'm a biofuels person. But really, you know, connecting the folks that are not normally in the same conference is always been the vision in my brain, because I don't like to always preach to the choir. I like to have other opinions and how we can work together. And that's what keeps bringing this group. And it's not a huge conference. I mean, Steve and I work hard to keep this. I personally will call each of the speakers because I just want to make sure, like, is this going to fit? Is it going to be worth the audience, you know, to come want more? And then, you know, the backdrop at the Colts Pavilion is just icing on the cake. I get asked already, where are you going to have it next year? Last year, as you know, we had it at the Andretti IndyCar headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
We have a nice partnership with them. So it's going to be a jam-packed day. I'm looking to June because May in general is a very busy month, obviously, here in Indianapolis. For Indy 500, and we host a lot of folks for that race on a lot of soybean oil buying side. But this one, you know, it's biofuels, but we're putting a little extra sprinkle, I guess, into these other markets that we are involved in. And that is domestic and a lot of international trade and export things that are happening. And with this administration, every day changes. So the panelists that have slides, God bless them, because they're probably going to be outdated at the time that this event comes to fruition.
Yeah.
But again, May 6th and 7th, Eric's going to have the registration link available on the podcast. So
Absolutely.
You can register. For those coming out of state, please get a hotel. I know, I think ours is fully committed. So, but it's not far from the airport, you know, 15, 20 minutes to get there. So I'm really excited. So you'll see me, you'll see Steve. I encourage folks to meet somebody you don't know. And that's, you know, you'll learn something new, I bet.
Again, it's a good time. Come check it out.
Yeah.
The High Performance Low Carbon Liquid Fuels Summit from Indiana Corn and Soy. Back to these bills that didn't quite make it through. Just talk about the potential. You know, again, we've seen other states do this kind of bill. We've seen them put this kind of effort forward, incentivizing these retailers. You mentioned before we got going here that, you know, we have some retailers that are doing this already because they want to be in this space. What kind of opportunity is out there for these retailers if they do just get into this space, or if this bill would have passed? You know, what's the opportunity for retailers? What's the opportunity for growth for farmers within the state? From a volume standpoint, from a profitability standpoint, do we have some numbers that can be put on that? Because that's kind of what farmers want to know. That's kind of what retailers want to know. Is there a number that can be put on this at this point?
Yes. So I know we're trying to kind of dovetail a little bit more in some of these, you know, federal programs, but I like why work twice as hard when they kind of can work together. So the way that this bill, you know, dovetails nicely into some of those federal bills I mentioned, like the Higher Blends Infrastructure Incentive Program through USDA, $500 million available last year. It's been an ongoing program for a few years now. And so we're waiting to see if that bucket's going to be replenished. But again, that is a separate bucket than a state bucket. But I like to tell the retailers, hey, if you've got this incentive to do this fuel blend and you can get a few cents on the gallon, that's huge. I used to run convenience stores, and I can tell you, if I could make a margin that was 9 cents, double digits, 12, 13 cents per gallon, I was doing a good job. I know I was doing a good job. Now the game has changed. Bringing in these higher blends of ethanol, some of my retailer friends are now at 36 cents per gallon margin. that's huge. That is, like I said, just in 2007, what I was doing was considered you're running efficient. So when the retailers can see, you know, the octane is less expensive and we could blend this more, we could price it so we could pass through this cost to the consumers for a savings and still make money. Those are some of those value propositions that I will go into. And then, oh, by the way, you can reduce your carbon emissions up to 50% by using ethanol, almost 80% by using biodiesel. Do you need to tell that story to any of your consumers or maybe some of your commercial fleet clients? I mean, you go to some of these large truck stops, they already are at B20. There's a marketing component to this. There's a peace of mind component to this. And then, you know, you've got those messaging points, you know, better for the environment, you know, less expensive for your wallet and better, you know, better for the engine. Like you can, depending on the client, and I say the client as the retailer, I will tailor the messaging that's going to work for them because some of these are really big, major players. I have 4,000 or 5,000 locations over a 16-foot footprint. Then we've got some who are just here in Indiana and they've got 75-80 stores. So they're not looking to get expanding outside the state, or maybe they are as they get, you know, I don't know, new management or however that works. But just nationally, we've got over almost 4,085 locations and we have almost 6,300 E15 locations. And I get asked a lot about, well, you know, E85, is that even still something that they need to put in? We're going to talk a lot of this on my panel too at the summit, so I won't go too deep, but yes, it is. There's a blending component to this. There's cost. So if you got a tank, you can blend it versus buying a blender pump that costs more money. You should have it. You should maybe have this product so you can just do it on site. So those are some of the things nationally. Now for Indiana, we've got about 150 E15, about 400 E85. E15 is growing more because it's the easier product to put in a sense of the engines that can take the fuel. So we say, you know, 2001 or newer vehicles can take E15. You have to have a flex fuel vehicle for E85. And so that's why there's this difference in the numbers. But the E15 piece is growing because it's just more consumers have vehicles that can take it. And it's usually priced, you know, 5-10 cents less per gallon for regular 87. So when you look at that and you're like, okay, it sounds like a really good thing. And we've got 200 terminals offering this product. What's the holdup? Well, every year and before June 1st, summer driving season, we have to wait for EPA to give us these emergency waivers, which I bet a lot of the audience right now is like, okay, I've heard of that. That's still a problem. That's still happening. Yes. So we're looking for some peace of mind. Steve is working on this on the federal side for a year-round E15. I am exhausted from talking and so much, you know, I say political capital, just so much energy has been going around this for over 10 years. And we want to do higher blends than that. So I'm advocating for this to say, yes, E15 year round, but not just stop there. We want to continue this and we don't want to take 10 years to get up every 5%. So that is something that we're hoping will get passed in the fall, legislatively, federally. But in the meantime, we really need these summertime E15 waivers because we've been selling E15 since 2019. Why disrupt the market when it's already moving forward? But when you've got the opposition, again, as you know, Steve knows a lot of lobbyists, there's folks that get paid to say no, and this is not good. And everything that we're talking about positively for the corn and soybean farmers, depending on where they're coming from, they could say, oh, that's not good for this or that's not good for that, and get really scientific really fast and then go over everybody's head. But really the message is we need to keep selling E15 year round. We've got, if this gets going for the country, you're looking at another 750 million gallons of ethanol use. If we could get that into California, that's going to be over a billion. I mean, again, California is a whole different topic, but the country needs to get this over this hurdle. We've talked about it, Steve and I, since I've started here, and the market's already doing it. So that's the part that I really stress. Like, if you already have retailers using this product, they're already promoting it. And honestly, you're going to see some things on the street too. I'm going to tell you this and we'll talk about it at the summit too, but you're going to hear a word E15 replacement. So what's happening is a lot of retailers, instead of doing this unleaded 88 route, they are actually just putting 15% in their 87 and they're putting what the labeling they need to have to be in compliance for weights and measures, still discounting it. I can't control the pricing at the convenience stores, but passing that savings to their customers. And it's just the black handle, and it's just their regular fuel. And the 10% is being offered at the premium. So they're keeping the 10% offering for what we're going to call legacy vehicles that are going to be at that 10% before 2001, so that the consumer has peace of mind. There's no issue with the misfueling or all these scary things that I hear every single day about happening with anybody's car. So, you know, that's going to be something you'll see in Indiana. We have unleaded 88 branding of a lot of stations with the blue handle. And so I don't want this to confuse the consumer. And that's going to just be a conversation that our organization is going to have to say, but because we've been doing this for so long. But really, it could be really a lot simpler. And still have all those messagings and cost savings and benefits that are going to still benefit our corn growers in Indiana.
Yeah.
So I know I went around on that a little bit, but it's something that needs to know, because I get pictures every single day of people filling up with their at the pump. And yeah. Hey, I see this. Is this you? Well, they're selling E15. Well, it doesn't look like the other retailer that's selling this. That's where you can't control every dynamic of a convenience store and how they're going to make money. And really, your first question was, why would they do this? We've got a lot of new, big, some announced, some not, like Wawa's announced, coming to Indiana. They're going to build 60 locations here. They're already building 5 under construction. I mean, keep an eye on them. We're working on them to get E15 going in their stations. We've got another big East Coast store coming in. We've got one, Wally's, which is going to be at the Summit. 84 fueling positions, 1 million gallons a month. They're going to have E15 in every single fill up spot. Come back around and we'll do the math on how many bushels of corn that increased just for that one location, 60,000 square foot convenience store. So we have these incentives. We have the grant things that we can offer even at Indiana Corn to help here and there, not to build an entire convenience store, but I can help connect. Steve can help connect to find what they need. If they've never done it, call a friend who has done it and help them get that equipment purchase going, find the fuel. These are all the steps that are behind the scenes that I do that the audience doesn't have to think about. I just want you to go fill up and let it 88 E15 save money and go on with your day. But thank you for helping our corn and soybean farmers at the same time.
5, 10, sometimes 15 cents cheaper there at the filling station to go with that unleaded 88. That's
well, and I don't want to shortfall 85. 5 can be up to $1 less in some markets. I was seeing like this past year it was almost 75 cents per gallon of savings from just regular. If you're using a flex fuel vehicle that you have the yellow gas cap that asks you, is this a flex fuel? You push yes, and that's a whole other topic. We're trying to bring back some of those credits too federally.
Absolutely.
But the automakers, so E85 flex, it's not dead.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
I want to get back to more year-round 15 stuff, E15, and ask what we're hearing from some lawmakers. Let's take this time out here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, and want to hear more about that, Steve, when we come back. The Indiana Ag Policy Podcast is presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association and Indiana Soybean Alliance, with support from Indiana Farm Bureau.
There is strength in numbers. That's why the Indiana Soybean Alliance membership and policy and Indiana Corn Growers Association need you. These organizations represent Indiana soybean and corn farmers on critical and regulatory issues affecting their industry. Along with support from the national organizations, National Corn Growers Association and American Soybean Association, the Indiana members help determine public policy positions on critical issues, including farm bills, trade policy, and ethanol and biodiesel legislation. Become a member of Indiana Soybean Alliance membership, Indiana Corn Growers Association, or both. Visit incornandsoy.org to select a membership. That's incornandsoy.org.
At Indiana Farm Bureau, we serve tree farmers, goat farmers, and in fact, all farmers. With over 250,000 members, Indiana Farm Bureau represents a broad range of farmers and puts power in your collective voice. You also get advice from our subject matter experts, more affordable health plan options, and support for youth programs statewide. So whether you grow soybeans or strawberries, membership means you'll be heard. Become a member today at infb.org.
We're We're back on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Eric Pfeiffer here with Steve Howell and Elena Jetty. And Steve, I teased this before the break here, but E15 year-round, to me, this seems like an easy fix. Again, you know, Elena mentioned that we've been doing these waivers for years now, and it seems like you can look at the political landscape, and we can, I'll paint with a broad brush here. Republicans seem to want to favor farmers because the rural areas tend to be the ones that elect them.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats seem to want to look at, you know, saving the environment, mm-hmm. Green New Deal, all of these things. And you can look at the emissions and everything that E15 would provide. This seems like the one area where they should be able to agree. We should be able to agree on year-round E15 because it supports farmers and it reduces emissions. But for some reason, we still can't get this done. We were this close to getting it done when we were trying to get a budget done at the federal level and trying to push that through.
Yeah, but just this past December, we were really close.
We just about snuck that through before I think Elon Musk shut that down. Got that part taken out of it. But for some reason, this eludes us still. What are we hearing from legislators? Are you hearing from the Indiana group about this in particular? And I mean, are they on board? Do we know?
Oh, they're, our delegation's very supportive, and we've got actually, of our delegation, I think to a member, they're supportive of our industry and supportive of biofuels. And we've got a couple of champions. We've got Representative Jim Baird, who we've had on the podcast. He's always been a champion for all of our issues, and particularly biofuels. And a new member of Congress, Representative Mark Mesmer, who represents Indiana's 8th District, has hit the ground running on biofuels. One of his first actions was to join a colleague letter in support of E15 and other biofuels efforts. And we've seen him join other letters and sign on to pro-biofuels bills. So Indiana's well represented in this space. But getting back to your concern about just getting this thing done, it is frustrating, but I think we've seen a more focused effort kind of heading into this Congress that we've got to get the year-round E15 settled. So there's a couple bills that are one in the House and one in the Senate. But before I kind of get to those details, just make the obvious statement is this is extremely important to Indiana farmers, both corn and soybean farmers. If we could, particularly though on the E15, if we can get year-round E15, that'll add about 51 million bushels of demand just here in Indiana. We're already running about 43% of our corn production goes through an ethanol plant. Depending on the yields we have any given year, that fluctuates for anywhere from 43% to 48%. But we need to build that demand, and E15 will do that. And the price of soybeans is always dependent on the price of the soybean oil. So anything we can boost biodiesel demand or renewable diesel and with soybean as a feedstock, that adds to the farmer's bottom line. So that's why we put so much effort into this. There's a House Bill 1346 that is a legislative fix for the year-round E15, and a Senate bill. The Senate bill is 593, and we're supportive of both those bills. We're actively working. We've got a couple members, and we got Representative Mesmer and I believe Representative Baird on that House bill. And we're working with our senators to show the benefits that this would bring back to Indiana farmers. And there's an effort to work this into a reconciliation as well. So unfortunately, that's how a lot of work gets done in Congress, is with either continuing resolution or reconciliation bills. So We are getting things teed up, so if there's an opportunity to work this into a broader bill, we'll be ready to do that. But we do need that legislative fix. We've been very fortunate to have those emergency waivers so we can have that sales year-round, but we need this legislative fix so retailers will invest in the infrastructure to offer that year-round. That's really the bottleneck right now is just that uncertainty about will they be able to sell it year-round. So we need to have that, and hopefully we can get that done early this summer.
Is that what you hear from retailers oftentimes is, you know, the waiver could come, it could not?
I think at this point they're pretty confident in that, but they're not allowed to say that. So I'll say it for some of them, but it is it's always a question, but they don't want to even have to be concerned about that anymore. So,
yeah. You
know, I say we've been doing it since 2019, and right now it's, you know, right, May 1st is technically the time when you switch from your winter blends to your summer blends, even though the summer driving season is June 1st to September 15th. And I know it sounds weird, but it's not just a switch you can turn on and off. Your fuel supply and where it's going and your entire distribution of all the trucks that are dropping that fuel off when you drive to the gas station and you see those big trucks that are in your way and you're like, what are they? They're dropping that fuel. That takes time to plan logistically. So May 1st is the time that we need EPA to signal the peace of mind with E15 waivers for the summer. I know there are some folks listening that are like, well, what is this thing about those governors? And there are, I believe, 7 governors that have chosen to opt out of this 1-pound waiver for their state, which all it means is there's 2 things at play. One, you got to put pressure. It's like chess, right? Your goal, you're trying to get to the king, but the queen can do all the moves. So you're trying to be strategic in positioning your chessboard, and that's what's happening with this legislation with E15 year-round. This probably wouldn't be as advanced as it is right now if these governors did not say, you know what, we're going to use our authority to let E15 be sold year-round in our state. Oh, but that creates a patchwork for the rest of the states, right? And all the different pads and how the oil supply and the refineries and the pipelines work. So they had to do that to pressure to get this stop talking about every year and stop relying on these waivers. And so when you look at it, yeah, it's annoying for some of the, you know, the refineries who are like, you know, trying to say, oh, it's going to cost the customer so much more money to do this because now, you know, Indiana, you know, isn't part of the governors, but mm-hmm. And I get asked this question all the time, but we obviously have a new governor. We had one that had, you know, was terming off, and sometimes, you know, these things get passed along, and Steve has got a great relationship with Governor Braun and all the folks that work with him and talking about being biofuel supportive, but there is a process to this. It's not like he can just jump on today and say, I'm on it. So now Indiana's part of it. It's a year process. It's like an application. So it's something he could do, you know, optic wise to say, hey, I support this and Indiana, you know, but it's not something that I get asked, can't he just sign his name to it? There's a process for that. So, but this governor pressure is helping push this legislation along. And yes, there's been some headlines if you've been following where those governors have actually had to request EPA to now get an E10 and an E15 waiver. That's complicated, right? I mean, Indiana's not in that boat. But these are just things behind the scenes, again, that Indiana Corn Marketing Council on the checkoff side, but then we've got our policy arm that helps navigate these waters, you know, for our farmers. And ultimately, I throw in the retailers too, because it can get really complicated really fast on all these different fuel blends that, again, I just want the customer to have peace of mind around looking for that price point, going to their favorite place to fill up, and going with their family to wherever they're going. That's ultimately what the convenience store also wants to do. And oh, by the way, come inside and buy some food and beverage too, because that's, you know, another way they make their margin. So I would throw that piece in.
It does beg the question, and I won't require you guys to answer it. I get to say it because of where I'm at. You don't need to. But where was Governor Holcomb in all of this? It was frustrating, I think, to many farmers that he wasn't in on this process when it was going on. Again, no comment needed from either of you on that. But this process was going on in a lot of Midwest states, and he was nowhere to be found in any of it. I would hope that Governor Braun, now that he is in the position, does jump in on this should it be needed if we don't get this taken care of at the federal level. I think hopefully the hope is that it does get taken care of at the federal level, and we don't need this governor pressure anymore. Mm-hmm. We can just move past this and just get it done. Mm-hmm. I think ultimately that would be the hope. That is the opinion of this host. We can move on from that now. There's that. There are other issues at the federal level that do need to be taken care of. We've heard a lot over the years about the renewable fuel standard, and that is handled differently by each administration, mm-hmm. though it probably shouldn't be. I think it's probably, in legislation somewhere as to how it should be handled. A lot of that is the RVOs and all of these things that can be a bit complicated. Can you simplify it a bit, or is it just an overly complex issue that it's just kind of tough?
Yeah, it's definitely a complex issue. So I don't think I'll get into the nestings of all the various WREN types and D3s and 4s and 5s and 6s and that. But it plays a huge piece in this. So the short version, I would say, would be to think of that it's a renewable identification number. For some of the listeners, you hear that word WRENs. It's like your car has a VIN. So you have an identification number for your car, for where it's at and where it goes and how you sell it and all those things that go into a BMV registration. The same similar process is like RINs for when a gallon of a renewable fuel is made. It gets an identification number. And whether you sell that wet gallon or you're selling the paper of that, those can be a different type of credit. And there's some companies who want to, not blend themselves because they might be short on what their renewable volume obligation RVO needs to be. So they'll buy those credits. They'll buy the RINs to offset their obligation. So they don't have to, it doesn't incur a cost for them to have to pay. So there's this whole structure that most consumers aren't aware of because why would they be? This isn't something that normal folks will be talking about, I guess, on the daily. But it does impact things like that are bundled into the renewable fuel standard. And right now, just with some of the pressure that's going on, and you hear a lot of letters out there, 45Z, 45Q, blender tax credit. Well, the blender tax credit is done. It finished end of 2024. It was a $1 credit given for biodiesel production. And that's something that's really kind of making the market be uneasy because 45Z, is incentivizing the production. Where the BTC was incentivizing the blender. So now you've changed it a little bit. So now 45Z, it's about a carbon intensity score and feedstocks, and this is why this is causing a lot of angst with who wants to ultimately make the decision on how this gets implemented and who gets what credit and what. I'm trying to be optimistic, but it's kind of stalling out right now, which has really impacted the sustainable aviation fuel market. It does trickle down to some of the ethanol plants who are trying to make these decisions around alcohol to jet, which, again, come to the Liquid Fuel Summit May 6th and 7th. You'll hear about a lot of this there as well. And so when you have something that says, hey, sort of the opposite for Indiana state incentives, you got something that's passed, but now you don't know how to implement it. I find that to be worse. Like, we have something that Indiana that we have seen in other states be successful. And we're like, we just need the money. We just need to fund it. Now you've got the funding and you've got it passed, but now you can't figure out, well, who's going to get this and who's going to get what? So I don't know. I personally think the latter is worse than what we know what could be successful in our state and point to other things. And so without this blender tax credit, there's been a lot of companies on the retail side, on the National Trucking Association, on the convenience store side that is saying, hey, we don't have this BTC credit anymore. We don't have direction on 45Z. Now we really need you to tell us that the renewable volume obligation number needs to be lifted higher than in the past. And people always ask, well, what do you think it's going to be? I mean, again, this is Elena's part of what I think, but I've heard that the 15 billion gallons for conventional ethanol is going to stay. I hear a lot of folks are looking at, 5.25 billion gallons, for that biomass-based diesel side. And they're saying that's what they need to signal to the market that they can, that they're going to grow and that they're going to, you know, do all the great things in biodiesel and renewable diesel, because this is what the customers want. And so that's the part where I think, again, with new administration and with the new EPA, you know, Administrator Lee Zeldin, I feel like he's listening. So I don't know the gentleman obviously firsthand, but you know, I think that when you have someone who's at least listening to these different stakeholders that are coming together, again, that in past have not, you're looking at corn and soybean growers and you're looking at renewable fuel plants and GMs, and you've got retailers and truck stops, and everyone is saying, we need this. There's different letters that we've been involved in as well. If you have someone that's going to listen, then ultimately I think there will be a solution. So I'm being optimistic on the RVOs. Remember, they were supposed to be done last November. I'm just going to throw that out there. They've got organizations that have sued them again. No surprise for EPA. Wouldn't it be nice to you to have a job? No accountability as far as your problem. I'm leaving. New administration.
I feel like that's just what the EPA is for, is to get sued.
It happens often. But I say, though, now, I mean, we've heard some positive things on just not blocking all liquid fuels. So, okay, get the RVOs right. Give some certainty around this 45Z. Is blender's tax credit really dead, or is it going to be revived again? I think on a positive, the administration is really saying, hey, hold up, internal combustion engines aren't going away. California, we've got a guy, like I said, coming to the summit that Steve will get into on his panel, I'm sure, about, hey, California, you want to ban internal combustion engines by 2032. How does that work with coming from the state that has made this beautiful low carbon fuel standard? To have all these renewable fuels thrive in your state, it seems like they're backwards talking to each other. So, you know, we've heard a lot that the liquid gold, I'm sure you've heard that word in the press a lot. I just don't see that coming to fruition, especially when you have a market of folks who aren't trying to buy the vehicle. The folks and friends that I know that have those vehicles have multiple vehicles. My primary vehicle is an internal combustion engine because I drive a lot. So until they get the infrastructure figured out, which you've seen a lot of those federal programs get frozen, when they've only built 8 charging stations with $1.7 billion, hey, could we get some of that kicked over to the HBIT program for infrastructure for retailers with biofuels? That would be great, really great. I don't think it should be this complicated to me. I mean, on your podcast, we're solving all the issues right now. So they just need to get these things done.
That should have been the name of this podcast, Solving All the Issues.
Yeah, just getting somebody to listen be the other part of it.
Yeah.
But true. I did want to back up to one line that Lena used, and I don't know if I'll get this just right. You could go back through the tape and find it. But she said something to the effect of normal people don't follow this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But that's why you need to be a member of the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. It is complicated work. It's technical work. And we've got staff that do this all day, every day, and needs to be done. We've actually seen a lot of progress in the biofuel space of working together with oil companies and with the oil industry.
And who would have thought of that?
Yeah, you know? We've always been at odds. It's always frustrated me because the only way we get our product to a consumer is through an oil company. It's a blend. You know, you buy gas and it just happens to have ethanol in it. So we've done a really good job of building those bridges and bringing folks together in this. Liquid Fuel Summit is a perfect example. This doesn't happen everywhere. Indiana's really leading in this area of breaking down those barriers and finding a path forward for liquid fuels. But that's why you need to be a member. If you're a corn and soybean farmer, you got to be a member. And you know, if you are a member, we appreciate you. But just know that this work is very important to the profitability of your farm. And we need your membership.
May 6th and 7th is the dates for the summit. I'm going to have the link so you can get registered. Visit HoosierAgToday.com. I'm sure you can also find it at incornandsoy.org. A lot of great things happening. Again, you can also find membership information at incornandsoy.org as well.
And I should say, we do have a lot of member organizations and great sponsors that are coming in for this Liquid Fuel Summit. Indiana Ethanol Producer Association, who is also part of the coalition on the state tax credit incentive as well. you got national groups like Growth Energy. You have state groups like Indiana Food and Fuel Association. Their executive director is going to be there too. Cummins is going to be on a panel with Steve. So we've got it all on the list for sponsors as well. We welcome Do My Due Diligence for our group. Just if you'd like to get in front of a lot of the industry folks, or you want to get, you know, in front of a commercial group or fleet or a retailer, definitely look online too. We've got a few sponsorship opportunities left to get your name, get your logo, and get in front of the crowd. So I'm excited. I'm sad you're not going to be there, Eric. We'll take some pictures.
I'm sorry. Take some pictures. Send them to me.
Yes.
Well, CJ will be there. He'll tell me all about it.
Yes, that's right.
Well, thank you for joining us today on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. We will do this again soon. Steve, my new co-host, we're going to put that in his email signature now.
Yeah, so. Do that. I'll be here.
All right. Thanks a lot for joining us on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. We'll do it again soon. The podcast is presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, with support from Indiana Farm Bureau.